Welcome to the Strategic Multifamily Investing Podcast. I am Jonathan Mickles, and I am here with Adrian. Is it Smood?
You got it.
There we go. How's it going, Adrian?
Fantastic. How's your day going?
It's going quite well. Thank you so much for being persistent and allowing me some time to reschedule some things here around about this podcast. So I know some people are thinking, okay, we're talking about mobile homes because I see a mobile home in the background. This isn't quite, you know, multifamily. But what I wanted to do for those that are listening is to actually morph the podcast a little bit, because while multifamily is ultimately something that Red Boot is interested in, there are a lot of people who we encounter that start in different places, whether that's single family or mobile homes or other things that they feel comfortable with. And so we want to be open to that. Also, in the future, we will be talking more about blockchain and other Web3 technology and the intersection of that with real estate. And so, yeah, don't be scared. It's all right. Stick around for a little bit more. So, Adrian, talk to us a little bit about yourself, man. How did you get involved in real estate from the beginning?
Well, I started out about 18, 19, 20. I moved out of home with my parents, stayed kind of local, 20 minutes. And those years, we were really, really bad tenants. You don't rent to Adrian and his friends at 20 years old. What I mean by that is we had parties. So we have eviction notices for spaghetti wrestling parties, mud wrestling parties, pudding wrestling parties, parking a motorcycle in the living room. You know, you don't want us.
I know I'm dating myself, but this sounds like Animal House all over again.
Is that yeah, right? it's similar. And I think we hadn't even seen the movie at that time. And anyways, I'm a problem solver at heart.
Okay.
So I had to solve this problem. Like, we didn't want to keep moving. So I bought a house. This is 20 some years ago when you could just sign a piece of paper and they gave you houses for free. You know, they didn't check anything.
So you
moved
were doing
my
the same
friends in.
Hold on.
That
so you were doing like a stated income type loan?
Yeah. I'll get to the worst one of that in a second.
No worries.
It gets worse.
So you bought a house, you moved your people in, your guys in, right?
And now what I did really smart here is I divided my mortgage up amongst my friends. So I lived for free.
There you go.
Which at 20 years old, living for free, not with mom and dad, check. And that was really cool. So I said, let's do it again. You know, I went back to the banks, you know, a few years later. They said, yeah, you can buy another one. But this time you're probably going to lose a little bit every month. But don't you worry. Real estate goes straight up. You'll refinance in a few years. And your concerning face is right. Because in a few years, when I needed to refinance out of that adjustable rate mortgage.
Oh, okay.
The market was going down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know a lot, but I would think, okay, well, your rate would go down too. No, the rate was going up. So I went from losing a little bit every month to a little bit more. Long story short there is I gave the house up as a short sale. Big ding to my credit, obviously, my ego, but my integrity. You know, I did not do what I said I was going to do and pay.
Yeah.
So fast forward, I bought a few more houses. But then about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, I thought we were at the top of the market. So, I mean, I've been incredibly wrong, maybe one of the most wrong people in real estate, but that caused me to search for something new because I had that short sale in the back of my head. I was scared to get, like, you know, to do it again. I didn't want that to happen. That's how I found mobile homes.
Can I ask another question about that short sale? After that short sale, you know, generally people say it takes about 7 years after that to be able to fix your credit. You know, before you can actually go in and get another one. Was that the case for you, or how did that work?
Fun that you asked that question, because no one ever asked that. At that moment, oh, sorry, a little fast forward, they said it was about 2 years I could buy something else.
Ah.
I started searching like at the year and 10 month mark. And, you know, then I find something right at the time. I go to the mortgage broker just to make sure everything's still set up. He said, no, they just changed the rules. You now have to be 3 years from a short sale. And that's just like another piece of why I just don't like banks.
They changed
the rules. I mean, I'm not a big fan of banks.
So were you selling the previous home before getting into the new one? Or were you always you kept the first one and you kept the second one? You kept the ones previously?
So I kept that first home because I did buy it right. I was renting it, right? My friends were paying my mortgage. Now I was eating not ramen noodle, but like Lipton noodle. So just a little bit above. So I spent 99 cents versus 50 cents. You know, I lived on $5 a day at a time because I lost my job, but you know, I had the short sale and I lived in the closet actually of the home. I had moved someone in the master bedroom and I moved into a 7 foot by 7 foot room where the laundry was. You know, times get hard. You do what you gotta do to then get successful. And I also think it makes you more grateful for when you have things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, I kept that original house. I actually kept it. I think I sold it like 19 years later.
Wow.
And
Wow. But you mentioned one good thing, and this is an adage, when we used to teach, when I used to teach, the CIAS, the Certified Investor Agent Specialist designation, which is say, you make your money when you buy, not when you
Yes.
sell. And you said you bought it right. So you bought it right, meaning that, again, when you divided up the rent amongst those who were in the home, everybody else, they weren't going to go anywhere else and get it something cheaper, probably, right?
Yeah,
So it kind of made it
exactly.
like they were already in no matter what. So,
Exactly. And honestly, I did not know I was buying right when I bought it. I didn't know almost anything.
got
You
it.
know, I was taking that action. It was almost the ignorance of, if I knew too much more, maybe I would have been, actually, I would have been scared because that first house had a pool. And yeah, pools are not good for liability. You know, it didn't even have the
Especially when,
proper gates on it. You know, and it was a non-screen pool in Florida. Those cost you a lot of money and headache with the leaves and everything.
not just that, but you and your friends at the time were known for spaghetti wrestling situations.
Yeah,
So, I mean, it's just so for anybody listening, these are just some, red flags, not yellow flags. These are just bright red throwing things around. But this is good. This is great, great learning, though.
Yeah, and but this is where we get stuck, and it still happens to me today when I'm on something new. For me, you get stuck in all these unknowns, and like I have found, if I just take action, I think back to that time. I didn't know everything. I knew enough that like, and I trusted some people that were guiding me. I took action, and it was successful. My first mobile home I ever bought. Looking back at it, I wouldn't have bought it at those numbers and stuff. I got the septic tank was underneath the back porch. Yeah, I see. But I made money and it worked. If I would have waited and waited and waited and waited, I would have the cost of the money of you know the money coming in and the learning experiences from that, I make more by having that momentum and that mistake then versus waiting 5 years for that perfect deal.
That's
That
perfect.
that's my comfort
That
level.
makes a lot of sense. That's the take action part. And I think what you're saying is that it's good to take calculated risk.
Yes.
If based on what calculated risk, and if you need to go back and unravel some things, you can potentially do that. And sometimes that unraveling happens in a short sale. So you mentioned that you went back to go get a couple more houses before you got to the mobile home. We're going to get to the mobile home, but I want to understand these couple of houses because you mentioned after the short sale that you had lost your job, you were living potentially on $5 a day, you'd moved in the closet of the master bedroom, 7 by 7 room, and you were forced to, of course, get some things together. Where did the money come from for you to be able to go after the other homes before you got to the mobile home?
The second home was you didn't have to have anything. The next homes that I had saved money. I was a saver. You know, I'm a son of a baby boomers. So, and one of them is a very traditional baby boomers where you save, 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 save. So I had saved some money to have another down payment, and that's really where it came from. You know, that's where one of them came from. The others. Well, my wife now, my girlfriend at the time, like her, banks
By
liked her. So
you.
they lend it to her at better terms than me. I
There you
had some
go.
money. They didn't like me. They liked her. So we actually bought some properties before we were married. You know, I don't fully support that concept because it can be a challenging if you don't make it. But you know, I've seen people split apart, and then now they're in business together, and I think it cannot always be good on the relationship. So it's a caution. It worked for us. You know, we had to work through some things, but it worked for us. But I have seen it as a challenge.
So in that sort of situation, I don't believe that you're an attorney or a financial advisor, and neither am I. So please check with your attorneys and financial advisors on this one. But you were saying that you all bought houses together, but basically they would lend to her. So she was on mortgage and title on both, or were you both on mortgage and title? Or well, you couldn't be on mortgage, but were you on title for the other ones as they were coming in?
I'm on so many podcasts and you're asking the questions of the hacks that no one ever gets to. And I'm glad now that you put that little disclaimer out there. So the way we did it, and I partially did this to see if it would work. I'm putting some little air quotes. I paid for everything that was a negative. So anything that actually had to pay out, and we did this through years of actually being married together, came out of my bank account that did not have her name on it. Put a bunch of cash in her bank account. She had money coming in from her RN job. Banks love RNs. And she didn't spend any money. Like, this was not realistic. She only had money coming in and never had money leaving, and they loved it. Like, it
Absolutely.
shows how, like, the banks are on a system. And, like, she never bought food. She didn't have a cell phone. Like,
Oh
it.
wow. Oh, because it came out of yours. See,
My account. So all
that's
negatives came from me, all positives came into her, and the banks loved it. She looked like a perfect lending opportunity. Now, yes, I did have to, once we were married, I had to sign that I would not ask for any of the money back, and it was all hers because that protects the bank.
Sure.
Now, when we weren't married, that was a, we'll say a risk thing on my side. I put $20,000 in our account.
Yeah.
If we split and we got an argument, she could have said, "So long, Adrian," and I wouldn't have any recourse.
There you go.
At that time, one of those, I'll say, hacks were, as long as that transaction, that big 20,000 I had put in, was over 2 months ago, they asked for the last 2 months of bank statements then. So you put
Okay.
it in, you
Season.
wait. Now, if they were to ask and they saw that transaction, the remedy of that was they were going to say, "All right, well, what is this?" And you say, "Oh, well, I gifted it to her." Then they would make me sign a document saying I wasn't going to ask for it back. So there was remedies for, but we just didn't want to alert them of anything to be suspicious of, and it worked really well.
So you're going to have to, everybody else who's listening, and I understand where you're coming from. Please make sure that you're talking to your financial advisors and you're talking to your attorneys about these situations. But I understand where you're coming from because for a brief period of time, way back in the early 2000s, I actually did underwrite loans, mortgages,
Okay.
residential. So I have some understanding about that. That's the reason why I'm listening and I'm hearing certain things and I'm like, how did this happen? And I understand. So source and seasoning of funds is a big thing that comes up for banks, right? So they want to know where money comes in and why money is going out, where is it coming from? And so a lot of banks have come and depending on who you are and your credit history, et cetera, they may go back 3 months, 6 months, a year or so and want to see bank statements to be able to articulate and understand exactly where the monies are flowing in and flowing out. So you may not have the fortune, if you will, in this sort of situation that they only are looking for the last 2 months. Again, you want to make sure that you're talking to your financial advisors, your mortgage people, if you're getting these loans. And it does make sense. That's true partnership where you are. I would also caution or advise if somebody is interested in, the short sale foreclosure thing and trying to get through that in the current market. This is 2024, beginning of 2024 that we're in. There's an organization called the CDPE, CDPE.com. So go over to Tony Martinez. Tony taught me as a master trainer within the Sharfin organization at the time. He now owns the CDPE, and he and his team are excellent at that. So short sales foreclosures, if you happen to be in that sort of situation. Secondly, I would say if you're looking for a financial person or I'm sorry, an attorney to maybe help you with making sure that you have those agreements between husband and wife and how those things work out, you may want to consider using a trust. You may want to look at KKOS lawyers, KKOS lawyers. I do not have a financial relationship with them or anything. I think that they're awesome in how they structure things. I could go into some more detail, but again, I'm not an attorney and not a lawyer. Please go and make sure you do that to protect yourself as we're moving forward. This is an excellent understanding here, Adrian, of exactly how, the mistakes that you make, taking a calculated risk, jumping out there, it makes sense. Glad it worked out for you. Now you bought a couple of homes. You got into a mobile home deal. Why mobile homes? What tricked that from just buying a traditional residential house?
So I mentioned how I had gotten a little like scared, worried 7, 8 years ago that the market was at this top. So I've been extremely wrong. At that time, I had hired a coach, and my first coach ever. I finally got over my ego that I needed help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and touching on that real quick, it's such a good lesson. The person that helped me get over it, he asked me a question. He goes, "Well, what makes you think you're better than Michael Jordan? Michael Jordan has tons of coaches and had a bunch at the top of his career." And that was kind of like a gut punch. Like, that's hard to. The best basketball player, or, you know, we can go Kobe, whoever. I know I'm not even a basketball fan, but all of those, all the best of the best always have usually tons of coaches.
Okay, shout out to coaches, mentors.
Yes.
Who was your coach mentor during this time?
So that's Ken Holmes. I joined a mastermind group, Life and Air, and he's still my coach now. He's a life and business coach. I have some just relationship coaches. I have just business. He's been my longest coach. And one reason I love the mix of that, because usually you have one or the other. And your life coach is saying, "Hey, don't work as much." And your business coach is saying, "Let's build this big." And then you're in the middle like, "Well, what do I do here?"
Yeah.
And because he's a little bit of both, it really helps. And we have like a vision. So I give him a blueprint. This is what I want my life to look at like in the future.
Ah.
So now like he's just helping guide me to this future thing. It's like, how do we get there? This is where you say you want to be. And so the question he asked me though, is he's like, "Well, what do you want right now?" And I answered like most people, I think, answer, "Well, I want some cash flow. I want some appreciation. I want some depreciation. I want some growth. I want it all." He's like, no. "What do you want right now?"
Yeah.
And after he asked me enough, I said, "Well, it's cash flow."
Yeah.
And he's a big cash flow guy, because like you can eat cash flow every single month. You can't eat equity because eventually it runs out. No matter how much you burn it, it runs out.
Yeah.
And you eat faster than it goes up in appreciation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cash flow can be predictable every month. So I decided, I want cash flow. And I had already bought a mobile home, and I saw the cash flow was massively better than houses. So he's like, "Well, why don't we focus on just cash flow? And later you can get the appreciation. So you get all these other things that you want, but you're saying right now you want it. Let's give everything else away if you have to. Let's get all the cash flow."
And let's give everything else away. Give what away at that point in time?
And I didn't end up, I was like giving it all away. But let's say that I didn't have any money and you have all the money. And I can say, "Well, here, if you bring the money in, I'll give you all of the upside. I'll give you all the depreciation. You take all of that stuff, all I want, out of all the benefits that we have in real estate." Peter Fortunato, one of my mentors, he's got a house. You can just Google Peter Fortunato house and you'll bring the graphic up. And it shows you all of the benefits that we get from real estate, you know, use, security. I wanted the benefit of cash flow. So I need to find people that wanted the benefit that wasn't cash flow.
Gotcha.
Maybe a high net income earner that cash flow doesn't make them much money.
Right. They want depreciation. They have enough, you know, some, you know, if you have a high, you know, W-2 earner, you know, they have a high tax bill.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they want that depreciation so they can offset the amount of taxes that they have to pay. Makes a ton of sense. So then cash flow. Let's dig into that a little bit more. Did you and your wife or girlfriend at this time, you know, go through your finances and figure out, "Hey, this is where we can cut things, so we know exactly what our number is that we need to hit"? Or were we still in the process of kind of winging it and just, "Hey, I just need cash flow"?
About this time, you know, I'm just within a few years span. Yes, we had figured out. I sat down with my coach one day full, and we figured out I was making about $300 net a month. And I stress net because I have a pet peeve that most people measure gross, and I don't compute gross because I can't eat that number.
There you go.
So the net I could eat off of $300 was the average per property per month. And I wanted to replace her income by the time she turned 29. This is the ego talking, you know, which ego can be good if we keep it in check. I wanted to like, and I did it because we made a plan. We needed $3,000 more to to be able to do that. And we could have cut a little bit more, but we're both frugal at nature. Like, that's the way we were brought up. So we could cut a little bit, but it wasn't, that meant we were doing nothing. Now, $3,000 more a month didn't mean we could go on vacations and stuff. It meant
no. That's just keeping the lights on. That's stasis. Yeah. You know, that's
the base.
Just a normal thing to be able to pay things and do life as you normally need to do. So you needed, that meant, you know, if you were doing 300 net per home, you needed 10 more houses in order to make that happen. Yep. Right?
Yep. Got a big whiteboard. It wasn't even an official whiteboard. I went and bought the cheap stuff at Home Depot that you really can't ever erase on it because it doesn't work well.
Yep.
Put 10 lines on it, numbered them, bought a property, put the street name, put the amount, you know, $165 out of $3,000, and just kept doing that over and over. And I kept telling her, you know, all about it. She did not believe me at the beginning, but, you know, I am extremely fortunate that she's been such a supportive person. I will, anyone that happens to be listening that's not the active spouse, you play probably the most important role is just being supportive and listening, even when you don't fully want to. If it's all day, tell them to shut up. But here and there, we just need to like bounce some ideas off of you and have some support, especially us guys. We're scared to ask for it sometimes. You know, we have that ego that's unhealthy. And so she's always been very supportive. So I'm reminding her, I'm telling her about it. And she's starting to believe it as she sees the numbers adding up. And what I didn't realize at the time is I don't know if I fully believed it, but by telling her over and over, I was affirming it to myself and doing affirmations, which now I fully believe in. And I nerd out on the neuroscience.
Oh, okay. Okay.
How this, important it is.
This is great. Yeah. Go ahead.
It was fantastic. The goal was 1 year. And that was put us a little bit before she was going to be 29. And when the 1 year came up, she said, I'm going to quit. And I had 10, so I had 9 properties. So I was one property short. She kept her end of the bargain and I didn't. I bought another property within a few months. And that didn't mean she quit and sat on the couch. No one, as much as people say they want to do that, that gets old. Like you. So then she was able to be in the nursing world that she really liked. And the power shifted to where she could tell them, no, I don't want to work that schedule because she didn't have to be there. And eventually now she's a travel RN and that's getting a little, we'll say tiring. She wants some more security, but she lived in Hawaii for 2 months. I flew out there for, you know, now we're in Denver. She's been all over the country as a travel RN, which she would have never quit her job to do that if she didn't have the fallback. Like, hey, I'm taking care of the basic bills. You know, you got to stop going to Starbucks if we fall back on that number.
Sure.
But you can live life.
Absolutely. So then you continue to keep to your bargain of being all the negative things coming out of your paycheck, as it were, and you're doing those things. So I have another question because I've asked others who've been on here who've been married before, you know, because generally, you know, the men are the nerds, if you will, and gung-ho and running off and like dragging spouses behind. But it seems like even when she was your girlfriend, you all had a conversation about what this was because, again, you were buying properties together in her name. How did that conversation look? I mean, could you talk to us about that?
I can tell you I'm fortunate and I can't give the full answer that most people need. Her dad had rental properties.
Okay.
So she already believed it. She already understood what it can do. And the piece that is fortunate, he didn't do it and run the business that it ruined family life. She got to see how it can help. And she doesn't love real estate. She helped the back end a lot from the couch, you know, stuff that she could do and watch TV. She liked doing that, but she's not the face. She would not be on here. It's just not her personality. So yeah. It worked because I am terrible at the back end stuff. I don't like it. It doesn't fulfill me. I'd rather be doing this. So we complimented really well. Today, she has nothing to do with the business.
Excellent.
It didn't fulfill her. Honestly, it started causing some tensions at times. And I'd say the one that everyone seems to do for some reason is that spouse that's not so involved says, oh, I can do the books. I can do the bookkeeping. No, you can't.
There you go.
Unless that's what you do for a living, you probably still shouldn't do it. I've seen so many fights. It was absolutely terrible for our relationship over and over. I mean, my CPA says he's seen so many fights in person, and he's just like, I'm gonna have to fire you two. I'm not a counselor. Pay for it. As real estate investors, we are usually good at making the deal and helping the person that has the deal. And we that means the other side of the brain doesn't fire of knowing how to keep our books.
Yep.
And I have seen traditionally most people that are good at that side are terrible at the books.
Yep.
And I used to think I was good at my books, and now I have a fractional CFO and I learned I wasn't.
You're dropping gem after gem here, man. One of the things you mentioned is, you know, probably a question that you want to ask if you happen to be dating someone and you're in real estate is, hey, what's, you know, how does real estate sound to you? Do you have any experience with it? You know, even if it's tangentially. I mean, we've interviewed someone else where they said that their dad was into moving houses, just literally picking up and moving houses. But he wasn't really involved in that part of things, you know, and he jumped in one time when dad needed some help. And, you know, out of that, you know, he flipped it to the other side and became an investor, not just someone who was actually moving. So that's something. Ask whoever you're connected with, you know, whether or not they have an interest in or whatever they have in relationships. Another thing that you mentioned here, you said that you all complemented each other. One of the things sometimes we look for when we're looking for a partner is we're looking for someone who completes us. That's a great, great line in Jerry Maguire, but it's not necessarily completion, but complementing.
Yeah.
And I think that that works. And I think even the silent spouse, again, as you mentioned earlier in this conversation, who's there to help support you is a great thing to have as you're moving forward in this. Man, this is excellent. So you started off on the mobile home gig. You got the 10 properties at that point in time. She went off and was able to continue her career as a traveling nurse. You guys got to travel. Where are you now in the evolution of your business and what you're doing?
So I continue buying mobile homes. You know, we'll say I started upgrading the quality. So if anyone's watching it, I own the one behind me, and those make a lot of money. But believe it or not,
looking like that, looking like that.
Oh yeah, I bought two like this. They're fantastic. So I would buy these every day. Because of the, I mean, this was like, I think a 35% return on my money with $15,000 out of pocket. So
what most times, you know, from at least from the multifamily perspective, you know, we hear syndications and, you know, 506Bs and, you know, that kind of thing. You're buying individual mobile homes, right?
And, yeah.
Go ahead.
Let's break that down real quick.
Sure.
We've got tons of great mindset. I love this, but we got to break that down so people aren't lost about mobile homes.
Thank you.
Multifamily space.
We've
got a mobile home park. You've heard of that for sure. And there's two main ways to run those. Just to make sure everyone's clear. You can own everything, all the homes, all the land. You own a flat apartment complex, or you can run it as you own all the dirt and you charge people lot rent to park it there every single month. You own a big parking lot. And of course, you can have a combination of the two. Another way to invest in mobile homes is you can have just that box, that 10 box of air that you pay someone the lot rent. You pay the mobile home park owner, but then you rent it out or you sell it on payments, but you only own a box. And then there's a middle ground where I found my niche is I own a single unit, one unit, and I own the dirt. So think of the single family world. That's what the box you would put me in. Is it's a single family residence, but the structure happens to be a mobile home. So any single family neighborhood, picture the one that's around you. And then maybe they're all made out of wood frame and they brought the wood there and they built it right there. Or it's all concrete or brick. Well, instead of that, they drug a mobile home on there. So the transaction is very similar. So it's the same concept of that. And I have to over explain it because there's a lot of people who have never heard of it. I like that because that means there's way less competition. Less competition, that's a check mark. And less competition also means the big hedge funds that the multifamily space has to deal with. And I don't know about you, but they've got cheaper money than me.
Yep.
So they can pay more.
Absolutely. So then in terms of the loans for that, you know, are you using all cash now or using hard money to get them? You do some renovations and then you refinance them. How are you getting in there? How do you position yourself? Just to just so I understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, so for me, I am proud to say April of 2022, I have zero bank debt. I don't owe a bank any money. I owe
Wow.
human beings money. I like a human being. So that means I fund my stuff with private money. And my definition of private money is someone I actually know, not a company that says they're a private money and then they collect money and they're really a small hedge fund or whatever. No, a human being that I know them and I know their kids and I know their story. I know where the money's going. So I get an emotional value of helping them. So them and then owner financing. Those are my two main ways. I am not scared to use my own cash. Obviously, cash runs out very fast, especially in growth mode, because you usually start out with none of it.
Right.
So there was a lot of the leverage then. Now today I like to have some free and clear. But on the mobile home note, we can't finance the ones like behind me. There are no banks.
Right.
So banks, the general on that is banks will go technically down to June 15th, 1976. It's an important year, not my birthday. It is the year that the federal government HUD said we're going to create a standard for these mobile homes, which was good. It's a good move the government made because there were bad standards before that. But that's the oldest that a bank will go. To get it up to code that they are still going to finance, it's going to cost you a lot. If you're going to go that route, community banks, credit unions, where you can actually talk to a human that is not just a system running it, you have to just keep searching until you find the one that wants some of that in their portfolio. If you get into the 90s, really more in the 2000s, yeah, you can get some bigger bank financing. That's also important if you're going to buy them and fix and flip them. Because the person's got to be able to fund it, you know. But owner financing pairs really well. So you have to know that. I like it because a lot of investors have been lazy the last decade and a half because they haven't needed anything but banks. So they haven't learned how to build the relationship to get the private money. You haven't learned how to get owner financing and help them trust you. So there's way less competition. More barriers to entry leaves less people coming after it, and then it's just me.
There you go. So now, how many of these mobile homes do you own right now, or single family, traditional stuff? Well, if you don't mind me
We have
asking, how?
30 something properties right now. Some of them, we have a few of them we are financing out because as I buy a newer, nicer one that's a little bit better quality, you know, now that I'm not only looking at that cash flow, I like some appreciation, lotto tickets, I call them. You know, I buy one of those and I'll maybe owner finance this off. Because
Got it.
another investor, you know, if I go the owner occupant route, obviously I have to go with the SAFE Act, the Dodd-Frank stuff, and make sure I comply there. But, you know, it pairs really well because people can't get financing on them. So now you can be the bank as well and make some money on interest with less work. We take care of, like I said, about 30. I have some that I rent from the owner because the title works so messed up. You know, you can see here, I problem solve. What's your
Okay.
problem? How can I help? Hopefully, my solution involves me making money. It doesn't always.
Yeah.
And then we can all win.
There you go. Well, this has been really good. So then what are you doing right now? Because I looked at your LinkedIn page and follow them on LinkedIn. We'll get to that. There is a nice little QR code here. Where is this QR code going to take people?
Yeah. So as I continue my journey, I bought these mobile homes. I'm renting them. Became successful with it. There are a lot of mobile home investors out there, but they're not as bright and colorful and loud as I am. They're usually the person sitting in the back of a meeting that maybe has paint all over their shirt and they don't talk a lot. Well, because I talked about what I did, I started getting asked to speak. And so I taught at some of the local meetings and I physically shook as I went up there, and they still make jokes about it at the local club. But when I got over the fear of the speaking, I learned I really love helping and educating because so many people did it for me. And if I don't pass it on, it stops at me. And that's to me a sin.
That's good.
And so then I started speaking, teaching, loved it. So that's what the lifestyle REI is all about. It's about educating. It's very heavy on the niche of mobile homes because there's not a lot out there. But another premise behind why it's lifestyle REI, not mobile home, is because I want to help people build a business that serves them versus them serving their business.
Okay,
That
talk.
looks different
Let's.
for everyone. For me, it's not working 80, 90 hours.
There you
This
go.
I don't even consider work because this is fun talking to you. I'll do this 4 hours a day.
I
As long as my
understand
voice
that.
holds up.
There you
You tell
go.
me to prep everything and everything you have to do behind the scenes of actually editing it. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I mean, that's work to me.
It is. Yeah, I mean, I try to just continue not to really cut things up too much. I just kind of let it flow. I think that the conversation is really going to be useful, especially as we continue, forward in the AI. Somebody's going to get the transcript
Oh, yeah.
and do some wonderful things with it. But I love this conversation. So I like that you mentioned, and I'm starting to have more and more conversations about this too, about growing and scaling. A lot of conversation has been around, let's stop the scaling for scaling's sake. It's really affecting our relationships, it's affecting our lives. Maybe there's some things that we can stop doing altogether, do less, and actually get more out of it. And one of the other things I was really impressed with on your LinkedIn profile, as I was mentioned earlier, is that you mentioned that the community is a true community of vulnerable people who can be vulnerable and, share their experiences as they're growing their businesses with you. I mean, about how many people are in your community right now?
I'm a part of three masterminds.
Oh, wow.
And anyone's not familiar with mastermind, the style I'm a part of is you go into a closed room, and if you're doing it right, you lay it all out, not just the good that's on LinkedIn and Facebook and everything. You say the stuff that you're embarrassed to say, and then everyone gives you feedback to help you improve wherever you're at. I wouldn't have gotten through. My wife and I had some relationship challenges, and some of it was because I worked too much. And I was getting my satisfaction there and ignoring her. It was on both sides. But I had that support group to go back to and get advice and help. And that's one of the reasons we made it through. So I'm in three groups right now. I pay to be in two. I run one. All of them have a mix of business and personal, because to me, I believe that the business is super easy if the mindset and the personal is taken care of. Because anyone can give anyone all the business plan, but if you don't believe it works, it won't work. If
Yeah.
your relationship's suffering, you're not going to be able to do the business right because your mind's over here.
Yeah.
And so that's why I make sure I focus a lot on that and make sure that my business plans, no one pokes a hole at it to say, hey, how's that going to affect you and your wife if you're saying you want to speak 100 times a year? How are you going to be happy over here? And I want people that can do that. So I don't even know how many people are in those. I like smaller ones because you can get more intimate. My guess between all three, there's 50, 60 people, something like that. But it's long term relationships. They know me by now, so I don't even have to get. I get three sentences in, and they can call BS. And that's what you want. I love you, right? And then the hammer's coming down.
It's coming. Right. You start off, you do the sandwich, you do the compliment,
Yep.
then you give the hammer, and then do another compliment on the other end. So that's really good. And that's great for where you are right now in running that mastermind. Are you looking for more people to potentially join that mastermind, or where are you with that?
Yeah, we have a few spots left. We have honestly, and I say we, is my one of my good friends, Dave Garcia, and I. We have not done a very good job of marketing it, and I don't have a great reason of that. Part of it is that we have been really picky on who we bring in, and we're looking for someone that is full-time real estate, as in income. Doesn't mean that their hours we measure on they can live off of it, and they're cool to hang out with. That's kind of a maybe not the best thing to publicly say, but we want someone because we stay in Airbnb. We're there for 3 days.
Wow.
And you got privacy when you go to the bathroom. That's about
Yeah.
it. We're with each other. So we mastermind, but then we're at dinner together. If people have adult beverages, there's adult, like we're with each other. And we don't want someone just gonna go to their room and not hang out. Cause we wanna it's a real bond to the carry. We don't want someone that's just going to be there for a few months. So yeah, we got, I think we have two slots at the time of this recording, and we interview people. And when I talk to people about it, sometimes like I don't think you're going to be a good fit for our group yet because you don't have the income, or whatever. Hey, what about these groups? Why don't you go check them out? Because I think everyone should be in a mastermind of some sort. They've
Yeah, because
been so influential.
Yeah, and this podcast sometimes, targets those that are just, beginning to, start the process, et cetera. It doesn't seem like, some people may be ready to jump into this sort of mastermind, and that's really good. That's what I was about to ask is, how would you be able to guide them? So they still can get on your radar, right? And again, you will probably have some good resources for them to be able to be referred out until they're at the point where, maybe they can come and join your mastermind. And again, even if there's not a fit there, there still may be other opportunities are out there. The key is to be connected, be a part of a community where you feel seen, heard, connected with, and that you can provide value as well as receive value. So it's not just a one-way sort of situation. That's awesome. Go
Exactly,
ahead.
man. And in my lifestyle REI, which is technically separate from my mastermind, mastermind elite level mastermind, but then the lifestyle REI is the education, and my avatar is someone that already has deals going, so not the brand new investor, but I still want to help every level of something. So I have stuff on there that is for the person that's never done a deal, and then all the way up to here's everything, here's the full package. I try to have something for everyone to grow from. And then I have a blog that, which is ends up being very similar to this episode. We're here to talk about real estate, but we sprinkle in a good amount of mindset because that's the most important piece. Hey,
Well,
come
you're
listen to real estate. Here's what you really need to know.
right. So let's talk really briefly about mindset here. What are the things that you're reading, or you would re suggest that others read, or whatever you're reading right now that you think are re really good for people who are, wanting to potentially get into this and thinking, this mindset woo-woo kind of thing? Because you stated this earlier that you're really into affirmations now, and you're really into other things that you weren't before because you really believe that they are really integral into helping you to be successful. What are some books or some concepts that you'd like to give and share with somebody who is open to reconsidering their viewpoint on mindset? And it's not all woo-woo.
Well, I'll try to keep this short because this could be an episode on its own. My favorite book is always the last book I read because it's the book I needed the most at that point in my life. My book that I recommend the most is Hal Elrod's The Miracle Morning. And it's because I believe that that has been the most influential book of my life because that has set me up to read more books. It set me up to take more action on the books I've read to have a better positive mindset. So I think I've implemented and it has been like that springboard. And I just think he's a fantastic human being. So Hal Elrod, you can read the book. He just came out with his new one, or you can just listen to one of his when he's being interviewed. But you meditate, you affirmations that we were talking about, you do some type of exercise, you visualize and I'm forgetting the other one.
Yeah, I
I
forget
can't
the
remember the
acronym, but I actually heard
yeah,
Hal
it's
speak.
Savers.
That's
So
it.
you do those every morning. And so I set it up and I did exactly what he recommended
10 minutes
for 90
apiece.
days.
Yeah.
And now I have my own variation of it. It's very similar, but I thought those are my basics, as my coach Ken calls it. When I do those, everything goes better. Business, relationship, everything. When I don't, it's pretty silly that I stopped doing something that works so well. I got to remember, all right, I got to get back to my basics. And I do some variation of it all the time. But I'm big on the mindset. I still educate myself about real estate. And because I always have to continue doing that. I would say, though, if I look at all my education, I'd probably do 70% mindset and maybe 30% real estate today.
Wow.
Because it's just so I'm a happier person because of the mindset. The real estate giving me money, that's a short-term band-aid to happiness.
That's good. That's really good. So many other things that I could probably say and throw in here, this has been a really good episode, and I really enjoyed speaking with you. Your energy is very contagious, and you're it's very evident that you really believe in what you're preaching. You know what I mean? And you're living that and living proof that it makes sense. And obviously, you and your wife, you all have a great, wonderful partnership that you're building. And I'm just happy to see that you are going forward and making the world a better place into doing things. So how do people get in contact with you? should they be interested? I see your website here on the side. Is there any other sites or links that you want to have where they can contact you?
Yeah, well, thank you for the kind words and having me on the show. This has been awesome conversation. The best site and way to get a hold of me is go to lifestyle-rei.com/SMIP, and that's going to be a custom landing page for your podcast listeners. And we're going to do on there. I have a free 14 myths debunked about mobile homes. So if you're in the park world, you're just thinking about mobile home, we got to get you past that. They're all trailer trash and all these bad stereotypes. And then maybe you say, hey, yeah, I like these things. I have more education, a blog, and everything. Or maybe you say, you know what? They're still not for me, but now I understand them and I can have a conversation about it. So that's the way I see it on there. I mean, there's links to my book on there. I have all kinds of stuff on there. I've got my social media. If I can help you out, I'd love to help you out.
So that is, as you see on the screen, lifestyle-rei.com/ S as in Sam, M as in Man, I as in Igloo, and P as in Paul for a Strategic Multifamily Investing Podcast. Thank you so much. That's very generous of you to be able to give those free resources away. I always ask one last question to all of our guests who come on. And pretty much we like to give people the boot. So, the thing that helps spur them on to the next action, the next big thing, what is the one piece of advice that you give right now to someone to give them the boot?
Massive imperfect action. Massive imperfect action. My late friend Bill Murillo has always taught me that and kept saying over and over, because we have kind of two types of people. People that just go and take action and have zero plan, and hopefully they get some type of dial back. But then a lot of us get stuck in an analysis paralysis. So when we take massive imperfect, we are planning to fail and we're taking really big action. And I've learn that I'm like Tony Robbins. I'm really good at studying people and finding the commonality of a lot of successful people. They all take action and fail forward. They get back up. They ask their community, their help, their coach, whoever it is, for help. And then they take more action and they plan to do that forever. As a recovering perfectionist, that was hard to understand. Oh, wait, I am not ever going to be perfect. So just take massive, imperfect action and then ask for help.
So that's very interesting. I have one follow-up question on that. You mentioned a perfectionist and having that perfectionist mindset and failing. And a lot of us, we do things, we reboot again. Like we're rebooting this podcast after about a year or so of it being dormant. What is it? How are you mindset-wise working through your inner ish in order for you to be able to say, yes, I'm going to take that next action? I mean, where do you go when you're taking that imperfect action and you're failing? What is your reset formula, if you will, to be able to get back up and move forward?
It's probably the single thing is probably gratitude. When I reflect back and see what I've done, I'm grateful. I'm like, man, I let this little failure, like actually have one little failure and have all these success. Like that's silly. And then the other thing is it's not failure as long as we learn from it and move forward. It's failure when we fall and stay there. That's failure. Everything else is a learning experience. So I got to, you got to learn about more about podcasting in the year you took off, and you got to recharge, and you said you're kind of changing the direction a little bit. That's success, not staying like a blockbuster. It's only one little spot. You're not gonna, if you never talk about AI and how that's gonna change stuff and the blockchain and stuff, you're gonna be stuck in the past. So
There
as
you go.
you learn that, that's the way I view it, and that's the way I have to remind myself because I still get stuck in the being perfect. It's a consistent reminder.
Wow. Thank you so much, Adrian, for your infectious, positive feedback here. And again, thank you for coming to the podcast. All the best. We look forward to working with you in the future. And if there's anything that we can do for you here, please feel free to let us know. Thank you again.
Thanks, man.